I've recorded. I'm just going to say it now. We're recording. We're live. Basically, I've got Dave and Juliet, Juliet and Dave here, who are in very far away, as far as I'm concerned, in the UK. To me, you're really far away. And basically, we've just sort of like started on quite an interesting. We've been chatting about COVID-19. I wasn't going to start recording, but I feel like we got to an interesting point on it, so I've started recording. So, and now I've forgotten what the fuck I was talking about. Oh, I don't know.
Countries that aren't letting on how bad it is.
Yeah, so I just said before we start recording, I was talking to a friend of mine in the States who's just like, yeah, we're completely in denial about it. And I was thinking today as well, what other countries are in denial about it? China definitely is. Like, you know, I feel like China's covered up quite well.
Russia
as well, 100%.
A lot of, but a lot of doctors keep on having accidents, don't they? So,
yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of...
In the third world countries, they just, you know, anyone that's completely corrupt government.
We literally don't know what's going on in the third world countries. Like, that's what's quite worrying about it, is like, fuck knows. The other one that I was thinking about as well was like, you know, like in France, how there's been the like, I can't think what you call them, but like the where people have basically been camping out near Calais to come across to the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what? I mean, I don't even want to know what's going on there, to be honest with you. Like, it worries me quite a lot what situation that could be happening in those kind of parts of the world or the countries where people are maybe not as privileged or as lucky, you know, to be in a situation where they can kind of get the healthcare and support they need. I mean, you take out the fact that we have the NHS, you look at so many countries where you had to pay for private healthcare and it's really fucking expensive. We're incredibly lucky to have that. I mean, we pay a lot of tax, but part of that is to fund the NHS, which is fine. I have no issue with that.
Compared to a lot of other countries, actually. I mean, look at the Scandinavian countries. We don't pay a lot of tax. I don't know. It feels pretty reasonable to me. Am I mad?
We just don't get a lot for our tax. I think that's the difference here. Like, you get the great, but like other stuff.
Well, yeah. Those Scandinavian countries I just refer to, they get free childcare, you know.
And they've got good infrastructures.
But anyway. Yeah.
I learned a really interesting fact, actually, the other day. Do you know I think it is the only country in the world that their national flag is square.
Which country is that?
Switzerland.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've been there so many times, I've never noticed that.
Yeah, I think it might not be the only, but it's one of the only countries in the world where their flag officially is square. And so I didn't believe this. And then me being very bored on a 2-hour turbo session, I rode past someone who was Swiss, and the Swiss flag on Zwift is a square.
No way. I'm going to be looking for that now. Yeah.
There's a little nugget for when you're bored out of your bloody skull on you know, second doors riding.
Wow, that has really escaped my notice.
Yeah. It's something that I just like did. I've been to Switzerland quite a few, probably two or three times. Maybe we're just automatically drilled to see rectangles and not squares.
I think so. It's what you expect. You often see what you expect to see, though. It's a phenomenon. I've just got some smart name. I don't know what it is. But yeah, you do. Yeah. You see what you want to see.
Yeah, yeah. I would like to see a hot chocolate, and there is one on my hand. So there we go.
Brilliant work like that.
So, yeah, anyway, how are you guys? How has everything been? How has lockdown life been? How is the young one? All that kind of stuff.
Sigh.
A lot up. Is that parent life, Si?
Well, I don't know. You know what? Like, the first couple of weeks of lockdown, it was pretty idyllic. It was. Yeah. I was like, yay! Days off work, and I'm not travelling lots, and our daughter's here the entire time, and it was beautifully sunny. And we were just in this nice little bubble of loveliness, doing nice things together. I mean, if you had to pop out to the supermarket, which I did once in that fortnight, it wasn't nice, obviously. But at home, things were pretty good. But, you know, how many weeks is it now?
Yeah, fast forward and Dave's still at home.
Fast forward to now. Yeah, I mean, it is wearing a bit thin. I don't know.
It's the not knowing.
I
understand why, say, government can't give you an exact date, but that still doesn't like relieve any anxiety I have of not knowing when I could be going back to work, not knowing really how bad is it, and when can we see friends, when's our daughter going to be going back to school, when can she like give another kid a hug, And then I've got parents that are, well, my mum's quite sick and my 92-year-old grandmother lives with her.
Yeah.
And so, like, obviously you worry about your parents, you know? So it is, you know, whilst there's a really nice side where you get to do, like, you get to spend more time with your family and it makes you really appreciate the things you've got. And so we're really lucky. We live in the middle of nowhere, so you can kind of, we get the good side of it, you know? We're not stuck in a one-bedroom flat with a kid with no garden.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
We are fortunate in that.
But it doesn't mean that it doesn't suck sometimes.
Well, exactly. You know? Well, for me, the absolute worst thing, worse than, you know, not going for rides with other people and all that sort of stuff, the worst thing is the fact that our daughter, well, she's an only child, and she doesn't get to play with any other children at all, ever. That's literally just me and Dave. And kids need that silly time with each other where they're, I mean, I try. Like, I'm forever dressing up, putting on capes and being really daft.
That age, she's three, so that age is when you start building that social circle. So it is, I don't know, like we're new parents, and I'm sure a lot of parents will put the same, that it's kind of, you end up like worrying, which is a nice distraction from like my own crap, you know.
You can just worry
about her instead.
I mean, she seems that's, I mean, I've had the privilege of meeting her once, and she's bloody rad.
She is. Oh,
yeah,
she
I mean, she doesn't know again. She's pretty chill with everything, you know. So you hide that, don't you, from them. But
yeah.
So she's having a wicked time. Like, you know, we're both at home all the time. She gets non-stop attention. But it's worrying, you know. And then we don't know. So you're kind of always unsure.
I guess the cats are loving it as well.
Oh, they are. It's really nice. It's really nice. You know what? Today, I barely and rarely get any time to myself, ever. If I get any time to myself, I'm working. But today, Dave and our daughter went out on a bike ride, and just for an hour, you know what, I just didn't do anything. I lay on the floor and I cuddled Catwoman, and she purred, and it was absolute heaven. And I was like, oh, I must do nothing more often.
It's one of those things, isn't it, where you, as you said, Dave, it's like you start to like relish the things that you do have because you're forced to. It is literally a case of the simple things. Like, yes, there's a lot of, I'm the same as you. Like, my dad is someone who's like a very high risk person to COVID, conveniently lives on the Isle of Man. So he's kind of well separated from a lot of things going on right now. The Isle of Man hasn't really, I think they've got very few cases. They had one guy who flew in from Spain around the time that I got back from Spain, and he was thrown in prison. So
no way.
Well, I mean, if the countries that did have quite aggressive quarantine, like, you know, and tracking, they've shown a better, dealing with it. Are there a better Godspeed?
Yeah, they've had fewer deaths. The countries where they've been super
a better
stressed.
Response.
They've come out better, but yeah, so it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, but I'm not, similarly with my, you know, my mum's down in Kent and she's kind of all right, but she's like a proper panicker and is just like worrying about everything, which is, to be honest, is like pretty standard by mum. But you know, it's just a tricky situation, and I, like, in my lifetime, in your lifetime, we've never had something like this. Like, no. The last time that I think of this is like, when were major sporting events last cancelled, like to the scale of major sporting events that have been cancelled? And the last time was the Second World War.
Exactly. I mean, it's the weirdest time. I mean, I wouldn't say the weirdest time in living history, because obviously there are people much older than I am who can remember stuff like that. But, you know, certainly in our generation, it's just the most bizarre time. And it's like a weird, huge social experiment that's...
Feels like we're in, what is it, the Truman Show?
Yeah,
I feel a bit like that. Like, I don't know, it just seems to be like I can't really get my head around it right now. And we must be I don't know how many days now, 2 months worth?
Something like that. I mean, when it first happened, I just kept saying to Dave all the time, I was like, is this really real? Maybe I've lost the plot and this is some crazy imagining kind of thing. Like, could this really, really be happening?
Our neighbours had a barbecue and invited their friends around after it started, didn't they?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, and it's just weird because, like, you know, suddenly
the controversy and the curtain twitching.
Yeah, and we live in a little village, you know, so this was like news. And the whole street's
fast in small villages, though, doesn't it?
But it is. It's just like the shift of focus, and now it's like, you can't go outside, you can't stand within 2 meters of someone that you know, or weird.
And you guys are pretty privileged to one being a stunning part of the world, but also, as you say, you're in quite a remote village where, like, you can still quite comfortably get out and go for a ride. Like, it's not so much of a concern.
We can go out the door and not see anyone for
hours.
Whereas, like, if you're in London, like, just getting from where you live, or if you're close to the city, you know, it's just so hard.
I'm basically riding outside as to the shops or to do stuff for work. Basically, I've accepted I'm not riding outside.
Yeah,
really, to do any proper training. I'm in Shoreditch. I can't actually step outside my flat and not see someone.
Yeah,
it's there you go. There's someone as I walk out the front door. But I feel like if you're in a situation where you can do it safely, especially even with all the confusion about whatever the fuck Boris was talking about on Sunday, fine.
All I tell you that is I can ride now, for as long as I want in one day.
Yeah.
I have to come home at the end, so I can't go bikepacking unless I'm in the garden. But I can do a really long ride. And like you say, we can do, I could do a 12-hour ride and probably see 4 people. I could see more cows than people, I reckon.
As long as
cows are all right, though. They're all right.
Efficient, take a load of food with you and all that sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, the only problem is water, though.
Yeah. I got loads of bags.
Yeah. Take a hydration pack.
But that's it. As long as you're sensible, if you can fix your bike
and
you've got enough water, food, I'd say from Wednesday, that's kind of... Like previously, though, I've only been going out maximum of I think 2.5 hours was the longest ride I did. And we live in the middle of nowhere, but still, I don't want to take the mick, you know?
Because it's not fair on everyone else if we just
Live it up. It's that whole we're all in it together.
Yeah.
We're all in the same situation. No one's more superior to anyone else. And that's something which has been very noticeable that where I am. And it's been bugging me a lot recently because I live near Shoreditch Park, and over the weekend, the bank holiday weekend, it was rammed.
I know, I saw your photos.
Fucking hell. Oh my God, rammed with people getting pissed, having a picnic. And then where my flat is, so Shoreditch Park is the opposite side of the road to me. And then my flat's an L shape. And in that inside of the L is a little courtyard and little parky garden bit as well.
Yeah.
And a group of people who'd obviously basically thought they were doing a sly one had gone into this indoor, this enclosed L shape in the park, and were just sitting there getting pissed and having a picnic. And they were doing it until about 11 o'clock at night. And one of my neighbors, I think it's the gent that lives below me, who's girlfriend is a nurse, he just lost his shit and shouted out his window at 11 o'clock at night. And I was fair play. I was you're completely in your right to do that. And the guy just stood there and just swore at us, and I was just you're just a selfish human.
Yeah.
You're a really selfish human. But unfortunately, I personally feel that some people don't realise the severity of it until it affects them.
Yeah. I mean, well, it brings up the best
and
worst, doesn't
it? Yeah. They don't care. Yeah.
Shows the best in some people, the worst in the others, exactly. You know?
Yeah, very much so, very much.
Yeah, pretty clear. I mean, yeah, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen good sides of it for sure here, you know, in our community. Everyone's helping each other and organising, volunteering and delivering meals and phoning people who are isolating on their own. It's been really, really heartwarming. And, you know, we've been getting on really well with our neighbours and, well, we already did, but, you know, just nice things have happened, which I hope that will continue. But
yeah.
So I think, like, the donuts are in the minority, but you just really notice them because it's so annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we're all making a sacrifice, you know? Like, I'm making a sacrifice. Like, my daughter's making a sacrifice. She's three.
Yeah.
You know, you're not just have a beer at home, right?
Yeah.
I know it's hard, but it's not like we're being asked to, like, go and fight for a country, is it?
Exactly.
Oh. I know, that's it, exactly. I saw the World Health Organization have done a really good, like, advert on TV. And it's basically, like, it's done, like, a bit like a camaraderie, like, World War II kind of
thing.
It's like, we're all in this together. All you got to do is stay at home and stare at a screen.
Yeah.
It's things like that.
Yeah, you don't have
but like
to
everyone
do much.
Moans about having to go to work all year round, right? I hate my job, I hate this, I hate that, right? And then when suddenly you don't have to go to work, all of a sudden all you want to do is go back to work. And it's
yeah.
Like, come on, man. Like, I don't know, for me, one thing that's definitely made this whole thing easier is I didn't really like my job, you know, or
yeah.
Really like my job. So when you get furloughed, even though you're on 80% pay, you're like, well, I mean, this is definitely better than doing a job I don't like. So it's definitely made it slightly easier for me.
Yeah. So then, like, so your background is you used to live in London, didn't you? And then you up sticks. How many years ago did you up sticks?
Oh, we can never work this out, but I think... No, it's
nine
no
years.
Way is it that long?
8 years.
Well, I think we've been married 5 years this year, so...
We've been married about 7 years.
No, we haven't. We'll have to look at the wedding invitation because I can't remember how long. Dave's going to go and get it. He's going to get the wedding invite. We have kept one lonely copy.
2014.
We got married in 2014. Okay, so...
6 years.
I think we've been living down here 8 or 9. Oh, my God, really?
Yeah, so I was right.
No, you said 10.
It's nearly 10 years.
Yeah. I said 10. You said 5.
Well, I don't remember. But, yeah, basically, we just... decided we wanted a different life, really, to what we had in London. Although we really loved London and had a good time there, it just felt like it came to a natural end. And we wanted...
I mean, we're working so much.
Yeah.
And you've got no time. Like, you kind of do very well and you're, like, doing all right. You've got a nice flat and you're spending loads of money on rent. And it's like, wait a minute, we could move to the Southwest and spend less money and have more time.
And work less. Basically. But the other thing is, like, I think London, in order to really enjoy it to the max, I want to be going and seeing loads of art shows and gigs and eating in nice restaurants and doing all that sort of stuff. And you can't do that unless you work really, really hard. And then if you work that hard, you're so exhausted and you haven't got any time. And then, well, I never got the balance right, basically. I couldn't go and do all those cool London things. And I kind of felt, what's the point of being here if you're not going to go and do that? You're just working your ass off for nothing. So, and then the other thing was we got more and more into cycling. You know, we were both bike messengers and I started going on some road rides and stuff. And we both got BMXs and we were spending all our time at the skate park and things. And so that sort of just started taking place of all the other more cultural activities. And we just thought, well... Why are we here?
It makes a lot of sense. Like I'm like at a similar mind. I think I spoke to you about it before. I have like a similar mindset. Like as much as I personally love aspects and element of London. Like, my, you know, my background's architecture and design, so living in Shoreditch is amazing for that. But equally, everything costs a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
And as you say, time is we only have a certain amount of time. You know, this is so like philosophical. We only have like an allotted allowance of time on the earth, and you can't get time back. Like, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Unless you're the Doc from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
But true. You know, he can do what he wants. But basically, it's impossible to get it back. So it's like when you talk to people who like bankers or work in oil or stocks and stuff, and they're all very money driven. Like, my cousin's an accountant; he's so money orientated. And I'm like, mate, you can't take it with you. Like, when the clock stops, the money stays here, and you bugger off somewhere else. Like, there's no. You can't. It's not going to buy you a nice fancy car in heaven or hell, depending how much of a good or bad boy you've been, and if you believe in that. And like, way of life is so important, massively so. And it's not just for your like, you know, financially. It's for your own like mental health as well. I think it's kind of something we massively like undervalue. It's getting better, but it's massively undervalued.
Yeah, I mean, I think. It just depends what you're after. Some people, they want to live in a big house and have a big car and go on fancy holidays and shop at Waitrose. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Excuse me. Okay. If that's what you choose to do, then you need to work damn hard and you're going to put the hours in and you're not going to get home from work until late, potentially. You'll maybe see your children less than Dave and I get to see our daughter. So... I don't know. It's a balance, isn't it? With us, it's like, okay, so now we're kind of not making tons of money, but we're here a lot.
I think a lot of time you can pick, right? It's not intensively. You pick time or money.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree with you.
I've picked time. Like, it sucks being skint. And you have to be really good. And you just, I mean, you do get used to having less money than you do did. Than when we did when we lived in London.
You get used to having less money, but you're still going to moan about it sometimes. Yeah. So obviously, still. Yeah. Sometimes they're like, God damn it.
Yeah, but when I think I work, I do a 22-hour week.
Yeah.
And then a little bit of freelance stuff.
Yeah.
And then I spend the rest of the time doing whatever I want.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of hours left in a week after doing a little bit of work.
I mean, like, I always think of it like, it was like the thing that, like, hit home with me is when I, worked in architecture, I was regularly doing like 7 o'clock starts and finishing at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I
was very much the same, like 12-hour days, like working every. I think it was like, I think my first. I used to do a gang outreach work, and I think I did a year, and I didn't have one day off.
That's hard.
You know,
it's hard.
You just, people don't realize that. It was good. It was fun, but it consumes you.
Yeah. It's a lot harder than, as you say, it's harder than, you know, not having time off. It's back to time again. It's like, it's harder than you realise. And as you say, things consume you. Like when I was working in architecture, like everything was all about, it was all about architecture and it made me resent it and hate it. But it was that simple. I one day just like, I remember... It's like three or so years ago. I was just like, fuck it, I'm quitting. That's literally how I went. Walked in, and I was like, I was working on a project for a high street clothing and homeware brand, which I'm not going to ask them. But there's not many of them that does both of them. And it's so boring. It was so boring. I literally walked into the office and I was like, that's it. There's my resignation. I was like, fuck, I don't know what I'm going to do, but fuck it. I'm done. I'm done with it.
You felt amazing.
Yeah, I felt amazing for about half an hour. Then I was like, shit.
Oh, no.
Reality.
But, you know, hindsight, it was the right thing to do, definitely. Because as I say, I was resenting the thing I spent 5 years studying. Well, 6 years studying and like was passionate about. I resented it. And it's the reason why I still to this day would not go back into working in architecture.
Yeah, you need to do something you enjoy.
I think you've just got to go with your gut. you know, something told you to walk in there and do that, and you just got to go with that feeling. That's what I think anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So both of you now are YouTubers.
I wouldn't say I am yet.
If you're a YouTuber as well. How many subscribers have you got now?
3,200, I think.
Hey, that's 3,199 more than me.
I've just spent a lot of the time creating alt accounts on Google. That's what I've been doing.
Like, you're both doing it, and you're both churning out like tons of stuff. And how? And the podcast that will go out before this. It's a similar sort of vein of chat to it. It's with Steve Booker, who is like, he's more like lifestyle fashion, and he's a YouTuber, but he's very lifestyle fashion focused, but has actually been getting into cycling and is now absolutely loves cycling. And like, he's like, when I was younger and I thought of YouTubers, he was like the YouTuber of like his generation. Like, his goal was like to get a million views on videos.
His is like a real YouTube channel. His is like really sort of professional and like a really grown up and like he knows what he's doing sort of thing. Like mine.
I just go and talk rubbish for a bit and like.
That's why I laugh when you say I'm a YouTuber. I'm like, am I? But.
Well, both of you are like. I feel like I'm
a cyclist and I have a YouTube channel. That's how I see it.
You're both cyclists and you're both YouTubers.
Okay.
Multifaceted.
As a YouTuber. I identify as a I do think it's fun and it is good. And I don't know, I'm not working as well at the minute.
So it's giving you
started. I always spoke about starting if you didn't like for ages.
Yeah.
Why not? Like, if I get to 10K, then I'll class myself as a YouTuber.
Okay.
I'll
say to them, before we started chatting with you, I was saying to Dave that I want to get to, well, let me backtrack. Basically, I've got 48,900 subscribers. And
that's an annoying number.
Yeah, and I've decided to have a break from drinking beer because with lockdown, I felt like I was drinking too much beer, yeah? So yeah. I said to Dave, do you think I should give up until I get to 50K? Because then we can have a big celebration and I can have a beer. But now I'm worried that maybe it's going to take ages to get there.
Let me check social blue.
You never know. You never know. It could happen quicker than you think.
So I need another 1,100 subscribers.
Until she can have a beer.
Put a link in the podcast notes. Maybe I can get a few
subscribe so Juliet can have a beer. I like. It's funny because like I got asked, I had so many people asking me to do a YouTube channel, and
yeah, but you should because well, I get why you do this, but you're already interested. You do really interesting stuff, so I'd watch it.
Yeah,
just saying,
we'd watch it, Chris.
Like,
yeah. So this is the thing is, yeah, I have two ways of thinking about this. Is one is like people would be interested in it. I completely get that, and the other thing is like. I just don't have the motivation to do it right now.
It's a lot of time, isn't it?
It's a lot of time. And I see how, and do you know what it is? Like when Francis was like still early doors Francis, like 3-4 years ago Francis.
Yeah.
I saw how much it was, he's matured a lot now, but I saw how much it was stressing him out.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I could see that I could get like that and resent it very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, he was working so hard.
He was full on with it though, wasn't he? He was like a video every day.
He was doing five videos a week. He doesn't
look
quite that bad straight at the start.
I do a lot though. I can tell you see why. Because to build a channel, you have to do...
Put the time in.
I got a boost because I had an Instagram following. So that like helped me get a bit of a boost. And like, I think, well, I hope this applies to me. Like, say for you, for example, it's really apparent from Instagram that you're interesting, right? You're not just a bloke that goes and takes a picture standing next to a bike and then doesn't ride it. You actually do stuff. So if you did a YouTube channel, it would be interesting, you know?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean everyone should start a YouTube. I think you have to do interesting stuff or at least be kind of interesting.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
The point is, you don't have to do like a video every single day like Francis did. You could just...
That's like one a week.
Yeah.
And it was more fun, like one a week. And then it was one every 2 weeks because I was busy at work.
Yeah, but that's the nature of it, isn't it? Like people forget that we have normal jobs.
Yeah.
Like, fucking hell. The and the other bit that has come across a couple of times in like... So I started the podcast because I listened to so many podcasts and I was like, for me, it's a very easy thing to do. And also, selfishly, it gives me an opportunity to have conversations with people I don't get to talk to very often, like you guys, for example. And I'm basically just recording a chat between us and then going to let other people listen to it as if they're sitting in the room. And that is pretty much why I started the podcast, was like it's quite a simple and fulfilling thing to do. But equally, I always felt that other people would like those kind of conversations because they're quite relaxed. But it's like one of the other things that came up is like, as I said, like juggling, if you have still got like a normal day job, 9-to-5 job, however it is, and then juggling like managing or management of social media accounts, your own personal brand, your relationship with brands, that's a job in its own right. And a lot of people, I don't think, quite realize that.
Yeah. And the more it grows as well, though, so the more you grow, the more work you have to do. So you put time into it, you get bigger. You then have to put more time into it, but you're still doing the normal job.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, as your, say, popularity or your like following increases, you then spend more time replying to comments. You kind of get more serious about content. Like, I mean, I've done it with my vlog. Like, I did one a week, and now since the coronavirus, I do like 4 sometimes.
Yeah.
When I can see, like, I know why I've done it. I've done it because I wanted to kind of, it gives me something to do, it helps build an audience, and I wanted to grow the channel, but it also does get stressful and a bit annoying sometimes. It turns into work.
It is, it is a lot of work. I think the problem is, like, if you're doing something like this where your life and your work are rolled into one, there's never really any time to switch off.
But you managed to, like...
Well,
you managed to merge the two, though, right? Because you managed to leave your like day job, and now you do this.
No, but I've turned my life into my job.
Yeah.
So everything I do is part of my job. So sometimes that's difficult because you've got no time to actually just switch off and take a step back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how do you find that? Like this is another reason why I've been very hesitant. Is I'm actually quite a private person. And I feel that doing a YouTube is a big opening the doors open to my personal private life. How do you find that? It's probably more one for you, Juliet, is that as Dave said, it is it's basically your career now, is you being you.
Yeah.
And that's your brand, that's your identity. How do you find separating, you know, private you with public you, I guess?
Well, it's weird because if I'm just chatting away to a camera on a ride, then I don't think of it as something that's going to be seen by a ton of people. I just feel like I'm chatting to my camera on a ride on my own. So it's weird. Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't think about the audience necessarily when I'm creating content. So I don't feel awkward or shy about it. And also, I am just a really open person, and what you see is what you get. I'm just like that naturally. So it's not too much of a problem for me. You know, there are certain things that I've had to think carefully about sharing. You know, family life. We had a big, big discussion about what we were going to share when it came to... sorry, I thought I heard are up there, aren't
they? No, that's one of the cats being
sick. Okay, one of the cats is being sick in a Yeah, family life, we had to have a big discussion about whether we were going to share with the public, and we decided we would, because obviously, you know, our daughter's adopted and stuff.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a difficult decision, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's weird, though, because you have to announce it as well, don't you?
Well, we had to announce it in the end. Basically,
I didn't announce it, but I don't have that much followers, so I just kind of, like, focus emotion. I had it in my head that all my friends that I know, they know what's going on, right?
Yeah.
So I don't need to, like, explain this, you know. But then the reality is there's, like, quite a few thousand people, like, combined that follow us and follow you. And they're people, and I think it's an important thing to talk about sometimes.
Well, for me, it was basically not saying anything about her. I felt like I was hiding this enormous part of my life and a big part of what makes me me. And also hiding it as if I shouldn't be proud of our family and I shouldn't share the way our family was formed, you know, like it had to be a secret. And I thought, well, that's not really fair. I want to celebrate my family just the same way as everyone else does. So basically, I couldn't just start posting photographs where she was in the pictures because everyone would ask a million questions because, you know, no one's seen me be pregnant.
Yeah.
Suddenly, our daughter's like, you know, old. From nowhere. So, yeah, I had to make that choice. Either she stays hidden kind of forever,
yeah,
or I've got to tell everyone how this happened. And I didn't want to have to hide her. You know, she's really awesome.
I really respect that. Like, I'm sure I've said it to you guys before. If I haven't, I'm going to say it now. I've so much respect for people that like adopt as well. Like my I've got an aunt who she fosters, and she's had, how many kids has she fostered now? Quite a few, like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And there've been kids from very unfortunate backgrounds, very, quite upsetting and troublesome backgrounds. I won't go into a lot of details about it. But my aunt, she's an incredible woman. Like, she's one of my favourite people. And I mean, the bit that she always says is really hard is when the kids, for her, has always been if the kids move on to a permanent home. That's the bit she really struggles with. But like, I just think like more people, if you can as well, like it's a really lovely thing to do. Like, it's a hell of a lot of respect for it. And I personally, I really love that you show her and your family because it's just really nice to see. It makes you human. But I think it's the right thing. It's right that you had that discussion with about whether it was right to do or not. But like, I personally, I love seeing it. I really love seeing the photos with you guys out riding around with her and stuff as well. Like that, the little seat that Dave, you've got on your bike, that looks awesome.
Yeah, she loves it.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like I started doing my blog and my social media account, and then even my YouTube. I started doing those like things a as a diary yeah. for myself. Like,
yeah.
I always used to keep a diary when I was younger, and I would cut things out and stick them in there, and I would have, you know, back when you used to get photos actually printed. I'm going to sound really old now, but you know, we used to have these things called films in cameras, and you'd get and then I would stick the photos in, you know, my diary and stuff. I used to really enjoy doing that. Anyway, when I started riding fixed gear bikes and I got sponsored by Charge, I was like, this is really cool and interesting. I want to, you know, save these moments for myself to look back on when I'm older. And,
yeah.
You didn't have physical photos at that point in time. You know, everything was already digital back then. So I started a blog to save all these memories and upload my photos so I could look at them. And I think the thing with my social media account now is, yeah, it's part of kind of my business, but it's still my diary. It's still me, and I still want to look back on it in the future. And so I want her on there. I want our family days out on there so Dave and I can see, oh, look, do you remember that time when we all went to the New Forest or whatever? I like that.
Yeah. I feel like that's something that's actually a real positive about social media is being able to look back on that. Like, I look back, like, through some of my stuff, like, I do it quite regularly because I just find it fascinating to like look at my I had an Instagram account when I was working in architecture, like as in when I started working in architecture before Instagram was really, I don't even think it was that popular or anything. And I look back at some of the photos and there's Fat Chris photos, which are quite amusing anyway. But there's like photos of like some of the buildings I worked on and projects I got involved in. And
yeah, it's nice to look back, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's really nice to be able to like have those kind of memories like logged somewhere, logged in a visual diary. And similar with like the videos, like I tell Francis knows it, but a lot of my life is in his vlog. And
yeah, I know.
It's an amazing memory to have and to be able to look back on.
Yeah, I was watching his vlog as soon as you weren't in them anymore.
mate, he's too big time for me now.
So it was good. I left loads of comments. I'm joking.
unsubscribe and unlike and unfollow and all that.
Yeah. Unnotify, dislike everything straight away.
Yeah. He's got big time now, man. He's only hanging out with pro riders, I hear.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No one's hanging out with anyone now.
Well, that's true, yeah.
No, he's done really well. And that double Everest did. Cam? Cam did one, and then Francis is like, hold my beer.
Yeah.
So I feel like the next thing to do is I've got to do three, right?
Three
Everest is.
Oh, so
we were, right, you say that, Dave. We were me and him were chatting, and I was gonna do it with him, but I'd been having a lot of issues with my back, so we sort of stopped talking about it because I was trying to get my back working effectively, and that would have just like set me back by like another month probably.
Yeah, a month or two. Yeah,
and. Anyway, we were chatting and he was like, would you do a triple with me? And I was like, yeah, I'm interested in a triple. I was like, double doesn't really interest me. Single, I've already done a single Everest. I'm not bothered by that. Triple, on the other hand, you piqued my attention there.
I mean, weird. I quite regularly do a three, like out the Zwift, like climb the back, just for a bit of a, because I'm bored, I guess. Like,
what's the things you've done on Zwift?
And I did, like, I don't know, 290K or something. Like, it was only 8 hours. Like, but that was,
Nice flat.
I don't know, I did like 1,000-something meters of climbing. It wasn't like, I just wondered, like, you know, how I'd feel, like, riding on Zwift for that long. It was really wet. It was really wet, windy, and horrible outside. Juliet was away with the kid. And I was well, what else are you going to do? Going to ride on Zwift for the whole day, then, I guess.
I mean, I've done that before. Like, I don't mind it. That's the thing. Loads of people are like, oh, how do you do that? And I'm like, I don't really mind it. Like,
I mean, you do long, like ultra distance stuff.
Yeah, and it's not.
I suppose like mentally you learn to like switch off, and I really want to get into like that ultra distance. And like, if you can't ride for 8 hours on Zwift, you're going
to
struggle
not the
doing.
Same. No, but that's only got stuff to look at.
I know, but if you're doing, say, like, you know, a 24-hour ride or a thing, you're going to get to that point where you're going to feel like you're on Zwift. And
I think
just...
the difference is, though, I would just never do that. I have no interest in doing 24-hour.
If you did a triple Everest,
I get asked to do
nothing
that sort
would
of
feel
stuff
bad
quite
afterwards.
A lot, and I'm like, no thanks.
Like,
I'll do it with you.
It's funny. Like. I'll do it. I'll do another 24-hour one. I've done enough of that. It's funny because, like, you look at a lot of people say it to me. It's like, how do you do like a 24-hour time trial? And I'm like, well, you sit on a bike,
you pedal,
for a day.
But do you like the same? So you'll have a set watts that you'll keep though for 24 hours.
I'm interesting. I'm really interesting. So every year I've done the nationals, I've done a different tactic. And so 2 years, first year was kind of, I've done it three times now, the nationals. And the first year was just kind of an experiment to see how it was. And I rode to a set watts for that race.
Yeah.
Second year, I rode like a negative split for 24 hours.
Yeah.
The last 4 hours, I was riding it as if I was like racing an hour long crit.
Oof.
Like, absolutely motoring for 4 hours. Jesus. And then in contrast, so last year, 2019, I rode the first 4 hours at the pace that I would race a 100-mile time trial, which is fast.
Yeah.
But and then I then spent the next 16 hours at like a set wattage, which was like mid to high zone two. And then I did the same again and raced the last 4 hours as hard as I could.
Which one worked better?
It just takes a lot of like, it's all in your head. It is 100% in your head. Like to actually ride a bike for 24 hours is not as hard as people think. There's obviously going to be tough points and easy points. And like someone's asked me to do literally do one podcast of me explaining it. And I'm going to do it at some point because it's quite interesting.
Yeah, I'd be interested to listen to the podcast, not interested to do it like that. But yeah, I'd be interested to hear all about it.
It's like, it is, I think it's 90% in your head, 24-hour racing. Like, and same with any ultra distance racing, it's 90% in your head. If your head's not in the game, you're not going to finish. It's that simple.
Yeah, sure. Like, yeah,
it's the same in any race. But the thing is over a long period, whether it's 12, 24, a week, whatever it is, you have much more like fluctuations of emotion.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes tricky. So one of the things that for me, with the first year that I did the nationals, I really like emotionally struggled. I really, really struggled a bit emotionally. The second year, I was a lot better, but I was still quite bad. Last year, all of my mates that like helped out were like, "You're like a fucking robot." Like it was just like, "Yep, no, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm eating. This is my pace. Done. Let's go." Like, and everyone said, at the start line, like a couple of my mates, Emily Atticus came to the start to like help me get ready and help me get signed up to and everything like that. Just because, you know, and then also to then take the car away and from the start line and put it to where your support crew go at night. And she said to me, I remember her saying to me afterwards, she was like, "You were calmer at the start than I've ever seen you ever." And it was, and she was like, "It was so fucking weird." And I was like,
it's your third one though, so.
Yeah, it was my third one. It was my third nationals, but it was probably my, I don't know, 10th 24-hour race.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just
my nerves on my first race compared to my nerves now at racing.
And yeah, start. I remember the first Red Hook Crit that I raced. Well, actually, probably the first three. I had my heart rate monitor on recording whilst we were waiting to get called onto the track. And you're in the what's it called?
The pen thing.
Well, the pen. It's called something in French. I don't know. Anyway, so
yeah,
my heart rate was so high. I think I was. Like heart rate zone 3 or something, just standing there because I was so nervous. But then once you've done a bunch of crits, I mean, you just don't feel like that about it. So
yeah, you get used to it, don't you?
Yeah.
What's your feeling about Red Hook Crit? What do you reckon? Do you reckon it's going to come back?
No way.
I think it's gone.
Yeah,
that's it. It's done.
Dead in the water.
I think Trimble may at some point throw a one-off lower key. Brooklyn
one. Some sort of event he might do. But
Red Hook's like, days are gone.
How do you feel about that?
Totally fine with it.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to race any more fixed gear crits. I'm over it. But this isolation thing, it's made me really miss the Red Hook Crit. Well, not just Red Hook Crit. The fixed gear crit scene.
I miss the scene.
People.
Yeah.
And there's people who I now won't see at all, ever, really, because they weren't like good enough friends that we're going to meet up. Like, people live all around the world, and they maybe weren't good enough friends that we're going to meet up intentionally on holiday or something.
Yeah.
They live in like Pittsburgh or something.
Yeah.
When the hell would I ever be there? When would they ever be in Devon?
It did kill that little network of...
It just means that there are now people that I will literally never see. So I find that a bit of a shame.
A few people have transitioned to gravel.
Yeah.
But I think that's why it's a lot easier to be like a bit like, oh, well, you know, it was good while it lasted, because... Like, gravel is fun, you know, and like I ride lots of other types of bikes, and when you race crits or something, it's quite all-consuming, isn't it? So you train just for that, and then you don't get to enjoy just going out for a bike ride, whereas if you...
Yeah.
Other sort of stuff is...
Yeah, but the difference is, though, like, if we turned up to a fixed gear crit, we knew everyone. We knew so many people, and that was so, so, so fun, and they were nice people, whereas a gravel race... I'm not going to know everyone, no way.
To be fair, I turned up at a gravel race, one in Iceland and then one in California. The same people were at both races.
Well, okay, Sammy was there, and there are some people that we know at gravel races, granted. But like a Fitzgibbon Crits, we knew...
It's such a good community.
The majority of the people there, it was really cool. Yeah.
If he does just a Barcelona one, that's all he needs.
He bring just needs back to do Barcelona. Oh my god, it's so fun.
That's the one that everyone just does, because you just sit on the beach and hang out.
The last Barcelona, I came out for that, and it was just such a good...
The race is the side event, like, the whole week before, just hanging out.
The beach hangs. Yeah, oh, man. And the velodrome day. Yeah.
And then you do a race.
It? And the race is really super fun as well, though.
Yeah, after the place was really good as well.
The after party. I remember the last Barcelona one. The after party was in that weird club.
Was that the one with the pool where everyone? Like,
yeah.
We didn't actually get. That was awful. That one, apparently. Yeah, everyone was unhappy about that choice of venue. We got
it was so weird.
Just hanging about down by the seaside that we didn't actually make it in there.
Yeah. It was so weird. And it was like there was a wedding going on at the same time.
We actually went to the venue, but we just hung about outside drinking cans of beer.
Did everyone get naked and jump in the pool that you weren't going to go in? Is that the one?
We got naked.
And they were climbing up like rafters and jumping off. Fun. And they were scared, don't go in the water. And it's like a bunch of crit racers. They were like,
yeah. I mean, to be fair, I think it literally took about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Before everyone was like, before someone had gone in the pool, and because there was a bridge across it. Yeah, it was good fun though. Like that was just a good weekend trip.
Yeah.
Right. And Barcelona is an amazing city as well.
Oh, I really love Barcelona, and so that's why I'm sad about Fitzgibbon Crits not happening anymore. Because how can we get all those people together again? Like, organise some weird group holiday. I don't know. It's just not going to happen, is it?
It's like smaller races that are still going, you know, and there are other more home groups like Thunder Crit, and then there's other ones in, like, France. I can't remember the name of
it. I'm hoping Mission Crit might... Yeah. No, it's not going to be on, is it? It's meant to be on in September.
Mission Crit is the last one standing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mission Crit, they're doing, like, a fixed gear Omnium.
Triple Crown.
They're meant to be doing a fixed gear Triple Crown, so I think they've got the... Hill climb and a crit and something else?
Yeah, so you got the Red Bull hill climb, like the bay climb. Then you got the crit and then,
something else. That sounded
arm wrestling.
We were maybe going to go for that day and I and our daughter. And we were going to, you know, like do the racing. But obviously it's hard to do that well when you're also looking after a three-year-old. And
Yeah.
So we're going to do the racing, but mainly just go to like hang out and have a nice time in San Francisco. Nice. But I guess that's going to be all off.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I can't see anything really happening this year.
No way.
Like, I don't. I know they've like. I saw the whole new like the men's and women's professional rescheduled races, and like
optimistic. You think
they're not going to do it?
No way.
Yeah, like
it's an understatement. It's just like. I can't see it happening.
No way. They'll just keep postponing.
It just seems wildly optimistic. So many events all crammed into the end of the season, back to back, and I just don't think the world's going to be back to normal by then.
No, it's too rushed through. There's no time for athletes as well. It's going to be such a hard thing to like do back to back to like that compact, and there's no way the world's going to be in that.
It's going to be a petri dish for spreading more. Disease, in all honesty, like
it's not like you've got a good immune system when you're racing a grand tour, is it?
No.
Yeah, and just think of the amount of travel between them, like the Vuelta and the Giro crossover, and I think it's like the Tour crosses over with the World Champs. Like, it's just, yeah, nah, I'm not buying it. But like, I mean, I understand. I was talking to someone who works for the UCI, and obviously these races aren't, they're not organized by the UCI, but they have, they kind of know what's going on. And he was saying to me, the main reason why they've done it is to try and keep sponsors involved in the sport.
Yeah.
It came out today that Bigler, Katusha have like massively cut salaries, and there's like the minimum salary requirement for women's cycling at World Tour level is fucking, is a joke.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, like CCC have cancelled their contract a year early with the team.
Yeah, I saw that.
And they've also cut all the rider salaries by 50%. But then you look at that, and like the minimum salary for men's World Tour is like €38,000. So they're still kind of all right. Like the minimum salary that a rider's going to get, which is going to be like domestiques or, you know, stagiaires, are still getting €38,000.
Yeah.
As their salary, which is pretty good, to be fair.
Yeah.
And then I saw that that whoever it is that runs Astana said if there's no races for the rest of the year, the team won't exist at the end of the year. So, I mean, it's tricky, but I know it sounds a bit evil to say, but it might not be a bad thing to have fewer teams. I'm not sure yet. I haven't really made a decision up on it, but we'll see. I think it's very optimistic to plan as much as they've done in effectively 3 or 4 months. And I can't see it happening. I can maybe see one grand tour happening, and it will be a closed road. No,
they'll have the classics, and that'll be it. You'll have like a single
day.
I reckon. I don't know. It's hard to say, because at the moment, like, we're having countries like reopened, and there's been like a second wave.
I don't think you can predict anything.
And they said they're going to only allow, so the first sports that allow competitively will be only at the most elite level where people can be tested, right?
Yes.
But like, there was no indication of when that would be, you know. And like, a peloton is a lot more close packed than a football match.
Well, the other thing is, though, like the Tour de France, they can't. It's not got closed roads,
no.
So they can't stop all these people gathering together to watch it. Yeah, so that's a really big issue.
But if you're a footballer, you can just not open the stadium
exactly and play anyway. Yeah. So I just don't think that would work.
No, it'd be irresponsible of like the organisers, and I think that's more pressure. They might be able to do it, but it'd be irresponsible when you're going to have to make that call.
That is exactly what I think is it would be irresponsible, and like, you know, it affects some things that I'd planned to do this year massively. Like, same for you guys. It's completely, like, changed what I was planning to do for 2020.
Every single thing has been cancelled.
Yeah, everything's cancelled. Like, which is, it's the right decision. It should be cancelled.
Yeah,
but, you know, it's like, it's made me go, shit, I'm trying to, like, I had some pretty big goals, which I never like publicly said this year.
Yeah.
And I'm quite glad that I didn't, because
for a ride today, I was thinking to myself, I don't know, like my mood's been a bit up and down over the last week, and I was riding along and it was a nice day, but I was thinking to myself, why am I training? What am I even training for? Because I was doing a double session today, like a ride in the morning and then a Zwift race in the evening. And I suddenly thought,
why
bother? Why bother? What am I training for? And then I had to, like, you know, give myself a kick up the arse. And I was like, because you like cycling. Because you like training. Training makes you feel good. You like pushing yourself. You like the endorphins. You like the sunshine. You like exploring. You like riding bikes. That's why. Like, forget about this, you know, you must be training for a racing.
And you'll feel better having done it.
I like the process of training.
Yeah,
I enjoy that process. So, yes, it's weird that you're not training for anything, but just forget that. and continue to enjoy the training without questioning it.
That's it. Bike races isn't cancelled indefinitely.
Yeah.
It's just for a year. And all that will happen is, if you were like, I'm going to take a bit of time off, you'd then end up looking at people's social media and be like, oh my God, have you seen how strong that person's got? She trained all last year. Indoors, in lockdown, and now I'm going to get my ass kicked.
Okay, I would. No, I wouldn't. No, I would. <I don't.
laughs> But it's fun, though. It is. And it's, yeah, that's what I like training. I just give you something to do, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I enjoy the training, and I enjoy, as you said, Julia, I like the process of it. And like, for me, like, a big thing for me has been like coming back from an injury. Like, I had a pretty severe problem with my back.
Yeah.
And I hadn't to ride. It's like seeing on Training Peaks, like watching my fitness increase is a nice, like, it's just nice.
Yeah, I love that too.
And then equally, like, Zwift races are really good for giving yourself something to kick you up the arse. Like, you want to get your head kicked in.
The funny thing with Zwift races is, like, when I've got to go up to the turbo trainer and actually do it, you know, like, the hour or two before the Zwift race, I really, really don't want to do it. I really don't want to do it.
Because they hurt.
Well, but then I get on it and I love it. I truly love them. I do. And you'd think that I would try and remember that. But the next week, I'm setting up for my Zwift race again on the same evening because I've been doing the British Cycling ones. Setting up for my Zwift race. And yet again, I'm like, oh, God, why am I doing this? I don't want to do it. But I do actually really like it when I do it.
I've got a full-on love-hate relationship with Zwift races.
I know.
I'm the same.
I would get weird about it and be like, I don't want to do it.
I always hate that. I'm exactly the same. I hate that, like, couple of hours leading up to it. I'm like, why have I signed up for this? What am I doing? But then when I'm doing it and then afterwards, I'm like, yeah, that was sick. That was great fun.
Same.
When I finish, it's great fun. Normally the first 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. And then I can't do this.
No, I like
and then
it.
I like it, but that's the train of thought.
I've got my headphones in. I've got my tunes going. I've got a special playlist. I'm like pushing hard. The endorphins start working. There's no feeling like it. You know, when you're working really, really, really hard.
Well, you're just focused, aren't you? That's all you're like, all I'm looking at
it's
is
a special
like,
feeling.
Like, yeah.
You know, if you don't take drugs, drink, sort of do other stuff like that, it is like a drug. It is a natural
It's pretty immersive, isn't it? You're just like in your little bubble.
Yeah, exactly. And I find it quite funny when you, it's like loads of people in like hamster balls, isn't it? Like just fucking lying about their weight probably and just drilling it on in a, you know,
about that because I
don't
reckon,
get me started on sandbaggers and Zwift.
I think lockdown possibly lots of people's weight would have gone up, right? But then they wouldn't
definitely gone down.
They wouldn't know it. So really everyone needs to be weighed before they do the next Zwift race.
Yeah. I weigh myself every day.
I like, don't have any scales.
I do it by eye.
I do it because it's like it keeps me on the straight and narrow. Like if I see that my weight's going, it's because I used to be really fat. It's like if I see that my weight's creeping up a lot, I'm like, oh, calm it back. A little bit less ice cream for you this week, Chris.
Yeah, but I would normally weigh myself at the gym. I don't like to get too. I don't like to zone in on my weight too much because, to cut a long story short, I used to be a model and that sort of weight scrutiny is not helpful to me. So what I would normally do is just weigh myself when I go to the gym so I could see if I've suddenly alarmingly put on an alarming amount of weight without realizing it. So I just do a general sort of check. If I was doing day-to-day scales, I think I would probably get a bit too obsessed. So that's why we do scales.
I have to. It's something I monitor very closely. Like if I feel like I'm getting a bit obsessive with it, I just cut it out completely. But generally, I'm pretty good with it. Like it's weird, isn't it? Like you referenced the modelling side of it, and I think cyclists are very obsessed with weight. But like realistically, like as far as for the sort of stuff I do anyway, like it doesn't really matter. Like raw power is what's more important than
I'd like to be lighter, but I'm genuinely not going to do anything about my diet to make myself any lighter. I don't care enough. Like,
Chris, I sometimes, you know, I do have discussed it with Dave. I was like, I would like to have higher, you know, watts per kilo.
Yeah, if you could drop 2 kilos, as a cyclist, you know for a fact if you drop 2 kilos, that...
It would help, because also I'm not that good at climbing hills, so, you know... There is that, but I just know that that's not a path I want to go down. So
Do you know what? One of the best ways of I've ever thought of thinking about it is we're not. Well, we kind of are, but we're not paid.
Yeah.
To do, we choose to do it, and therefore, like we're not world tour riders or anything. Like where it's that critical. Like
Exactly.
For me, like I got told. For the National 24s last year, I got told to put on weight.
Oh, really?
I got told to put on weight because, and same before, like before Atlas Mountains, for example, as well. Because you burn so much, and also it just like toughens you up a bit. Like having a bit of extra meat on like endurance races is a good thing because you burn it off, and two, it makes you a bit tougher. Like I went into the last year I went into the 24 at 79 or 80 kilos.
Yeah.
And then, like, just before it, I was, like, 73 kilos. And for me, 73 kilos, like, I feel the cold really bad. And I might, like, 73 kilos is the point for me where I can, any lighter... And that balance of watts per kilo does not work for me. So the lighter I am of 73 kilos, my wattage goes down as well. And 73 kilos, I've tested this a couple of times. That is pretty much the point of where I can be efficient.
Yeah, there is a definite tipping point for most people, isn't there?
I think that's why I'm good. I need to be heavier.
You need to be heavier. Well, it's not like you don't eat enough. No, I need to be heavier. Never stops eating junk mainly.
It's like Dave's just a lucky person. You've got good genes.
Yeah, I've got really fast metabolism, and I've got the worst diet ever. I mean, it's better because Juliet's really healthy, so it kind of balances it out a bit. And then everything being closed definitely helps. So I reckon I'm healthier as a result of lockdown.
You are, because Dave would just casually stroll down to the village shop normally. And he'll get, like, you know, like the sharing bars of Galaxy chocolate.
Yeah.
He'll get one of those and he'll have eaten the whole thing before he gets home.
The shop's about 50 metres away.
I mean, that's impressive. I'm impressed.
Yeah, that's just totally normal.
I really like sweets.
Hey, do you know what I take as when I go for a ride, like long rides, what my ride fuel is Haribo. Really? Or like, gummy
potatoes these days.
Oh, I do potatoes as well, but I'm going for sweets at the moment.
How do you carry your potatoes? Do you wrap them in something, or just put them in your jersey pocket?
Just puts them in his jersey pocket.
I put them in like a bit of foil.
Yeah.
And then I like such a funny thing. I make the foil into like a bowl.
What?
And then so like. I don't know how to explain it. So I take like a square of foil and then like push it down in the middle. It's like a vase, sort of a bowl, and I put them in there. So it's basically like a pocket inside my pocket.
Yeah. So you just take it out and it doesn't like...
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. I see. So you're basically lining your jersey pocket with foil so you can just take a single potato out at a time without having to unwrap it.
Exactly.
Mash in one pocket, spoon in the other. And it's 24-hour time trial, scooping mash out.
You could have mash sort of quite thin in your hydro pack.
It's like that smash, isn't it? Do you remember smash? That disgusting stuff.
I'm
going to do it while cycling. Do you know, I... at the at the 24 last year, I made rice cakes, but they were like, the idea, I love pizza. Who doesn't? Yeah.
Yep.
All right. But I made like pizza style rice cakes. So they were rice cakes, really good, like high carb, perfect for that kind of thing. Pretty simple. But I basically like put, I mixed them with like Philadelphia cheese and like sun-dried tomatoes and olives.
Oh, no.
It sounds really good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. My God, they made me so sick.
Oh, no.
I had two during the race.
Before the big event.
Yeah, you know, lesson learned. All right, I didn't try. And
well, that's
well, while I was making them, I tried them, but like I think, you know, when your body's under pressure and you know you're racing, your body acts differently. So I went and I ate the first one and I threw it up, literally threw it up within 5 minutes.
Oh no.
And then I went into my pocket and because I have like quite a strict eating schedule for that race. I basically eat something like every half an hour. And I was like, fuck, okay, that's not good because that's then put me in a slight calorie deficit.
Yeah.
Because I've thrown up one, what I should have eaten for that half hour stint. But probably also thrown up a chunk of what I've eaten previously. So I went into my pockets and I was like, fuck, okay, what have I got in here? And I grabbed a thing that was wrapped in foil. Didn't know what it was. I thought it might be like a flapjack or some saurine or something. And I grabbed it and I went and ate again. And it was a fucking, one of these fucking rice cakes again. And I threw it up again. And then I came in and stopped because, so my stoppage time, I stopped every like 4 hours, but I was stopping for no more than 2 minutes every 4 hours.
Wow.
And that was basically to refill water bottles and to fill up my pockets with more food, basically. And I stopped and my friend Will, who's a nutritionist, was like, is that a bit sick on your bike? And I was like, yes. And he was like, what made you throw up? And I was like, the rice cakes. And he was like, how many did you eat? Two. Did you throw them both up? Yes. And he was like, cool, well, they're going straight in the bin. And he walked off and he came back with a massive bag of Haribo Star Mix. And he was like, timing-wise, Chris, you've got about a minute left before you need to go again. That bag of Star Mix needs to be eaten in a minute.
Wow.
Fucking happened. And I did not feel great for doing it, but it damn well happened. But he was like, you need to eat it because you need to get those calories back into your body because so don't make pizza flavored rice cakes. That's my,
they sound really nice though. They actually sound really nice.
They were really nice. I can share the recipe with you, and outside of a racing context, they probably would be quite nice. Yeah. But in that situation,
race, I'll just, you know, grab a bite.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that was it wasn't my finest moment, shall we say? But hey ho, you know, live and learn. But roast potatoes are so good because they're so simple. Like it just carbs.
Yeah, carbs. I'm gonna get on that one. I've seen it a lot.
Yeah,
it's just a
thing that's happening in cycling, the roast potato thing. Is it, do you just like
roast potato?
All right, so what I do is I buy like new potatoes generally because it's smaller.
Yeah.
And then I don't take the skin off. I generally will leave the skin on because I like that. And what I do is I boil them for a little bit to make them softer. And then I shove them in the oven with a bit of oil, salt, pepper, maybe some other herb, depending on what I can find. Like sometimes I put like chili powder with them just to mix it up. Sometimes paprika, sometimes I just don't put anything. But like I try and make them quite salty as well.
Yeah.
Shove them in the oven until they're like crispy. And then I just put them in a box in my fridge. If I'm not going for a ride that day, I just put them in the fridge. I don't mind eating cold potatoes. Like,
no,
same.
Yeah. So it's that simple. Like, and it's so like a lot of like there's a lot of very good cycling food out there, yeah? There's loads of brands, like, yeah. There's tons of brands making great performance food, but it's expensive. Like, it does add up.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes you just don't want to be eating something like that. You want something that's more natural. So, roast potatoes.
Nice. Gonna do it.
But so you need to eat things that you like eating as well.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, easy to eat.
Doing longer things.
Yeah, exactly. And what, like, for me, one of the other things that worked really well was mixing, especially for long stuff, like, so much of it is sweet, like, there's loads of sweet stuff. But what the biggest, like, best thing I learned, one was savory, but also citrusy things. Because, so, like, flapjacks with, like, lemon or orange in them, for example, because it's citrusy, it's responding to a different taste bud.
That's a good idea,
and it like freshens up your palate really well.
Yeah.
So that's one other tip that I have, and the other one was using like really salty things, because there's this other like taste called umami.
Yeah.
And it's like it's basically a way of engaging that taste sense. So like just things like with soy sauce on them, that kind of thing, like rice cakes with soy sauce on.
Yeah.
Because that then engages a different taste bud. So like engaging these different taste buds mean that you keep eating, as opposed to just going, oh man, I really don't like, you see people that just continually have gels all the time and you're like, man, I don't want to have another gel because I'm so fed up with the taste of them.
Yeah.
For me, like, gels was always like the last, when you get to a point where you get like flavor fatigue and stomach fatigue, and when you get to that point, that's when you do the gels. And then when it gets really bad, that's when you go to like liquid carbs, because your stomach just gets to the point where it's like, oh fuck, I can't do this anymore.
Mm.
There you go. That's my long distance food tips there. That's
a good tips. Thanks, Chris.
That's it. So when do we do that triple Everest?
When we do that triple Everest, we'll have a kilo of potatoes each.
For each hour.
Yeah.
That's like 2 and a bit days, isn't it? How long would it take?
Yeah, but I reckon it'd be 3 days. 2 to 3 days. Yeah.
Oh, stop that. Seriously.
Look, you kind of talk to me again when we're locked down like permanently because everyone keeps on going to the park.
Oh, God.
And then you're not allowed to ride outside and be like, right. You'll end up right. Did you hear about so-and-so? He did 8 Everests. Gaiman, just do one in like 8 hours, or just try to do one in 8 hours or something.
Bill Gaiman, Everest did, he broke the record, didn't he? Yeah. Not 40 minutes of it.
Yeah.
All right.
Mega. Mad man. But I mean, he used to be pro.
Yeah.
And like, he was fucking good at climbing hills.
Yeah. So. I reckon he's probably fitter now than he was then.
Yeah. He says that. He says that he thinks he's fitter now than he was.
He tried, didn't he, when he had that big crash when he was trying out for Team USA, wasn't it? The Velodrome thing. And he put real good times, you know. So if you're good enough to compete in the Olympics, you certainly haven't lost your form.
Guy's a beast. Guy's a beast. And he's fucking hilarious on social media as well.
Yeah,
got a lot. And I really respect that he uses his influence to fundraise for charity. I think that's great.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff for charity. He's a good guy. I'm gonna we've been talking for like an hour and 20 minutes, which is awesome. I just looked at the time purely and was like, fuck me, it's 10:30. What I'm gonna do is I chuck this at everyone. I pre-warned Juliet. I don't know if Juliet pre-warned you, Dave.
Alright, and oh my god.
At the end of every podcast, I ask for like 5 life tips or hacks that you can give to listeners. And as you're both in this podcast, whenever I've done podcasts with 2 people in it, they've normally done 2 each and then freestyled the one between them. They've normally done like 2 each and then freestyled one. So...
Well, we did discuss this. I imagine Dave's probably forgotten his ones.
No, mine was one. Wait a minute.
Shall I go then?
No. Right. Yeah. Always. Right. Do you know when you get like annoying emails or annoying things happen, right?
Or something annoys you.
Yeah. And you reply or reply email, right? Never send it. Don't sleep on it, or at least sleep on it and then wake up and then.
Yeah, you always know, sleep on it.
Yeah, never send it. And that applies to, like, if you're drunk and you're on Facebook and someone annoys you. Maybe don't send that message. But so many times I've, like, been annoyed at work or working with brands, and I get, you know, you get fed up with things sometimes. And I draft, like, this hate-filled email having a massive rant that I'm never going to send. Do you know what I mean?
The process of writing it is really cathartic. Yeah. You don't have to send it, though.
I've only ever sent one once, you know. And, like, but, yeah, so that's one of mine. It's like, write it.
You still talk to that person or brand, whoever it was, that you sent that one to?
It was when I quit a job, actually.
I
quit because it was a charity and they were basically all really dodgy, and I emailed it to them and the trustees, and like 10 trustees stepped down from the charity, and it caused loads of controversy, and I then struggled to get a job afterwards because they were really quite mean, but it was so worth it. And then I don't send it because, you know, it's a nice...
That one needed to be said.
Yeah, that needed to be said. But, like, you know, it's a good, exercise those demons and then don't actually send it. Another one.
Nice.
Races. I like that. So I always used to get really nervous at the start of races, and our mate that raced at like a world level BMX, and we were just kind of chatting, and he was like, well, look, why do you do the races? And I was like, oh, because they're fun, right? And he was like, well, why are you getting nervous if it's something you're doing that's like enjoyable? So I just kind of, the next race I was at, I don't know, it was really weird. It's like it almost flicked something. And I was like, this isn't that bad. I just got to ride around a bit, right? And it kind of changed my outlook on racing because, you know.
I think one of mine is kind of similar to that. There was this coach that I was working with, James, like, when I'd never worked with a coach before. And he, I decided I was going to race Red Hook Crit. And he coached me for 4 weeks before the race. And, he said to me, actually, it wasn't for that particular race, but he said to me at some point during the time that he was coaching me, he put it on my training plan. I'm not really being very concise here. But basically, he put that, you know, how to warm up and what to do and what to take to the race. And then he put in big letters, now it's time to race and enjoy all the hard work. This is the moment that you've been waiting for. Do you know what I mean? So enjoy it. And that made me stop sort of, you know, like sometimes in a race, you can kind of wish it was over because it's really painful.
Yeah.
It kind of made me stop doing that and actually like look around, enjoy this sensation, enjoy this feeling in my lungs, enjoy the like, you know, crazy alert sort of hyper real crazy environment you're in. And just, I don't know, it just made me pause and actually be in the moment and enjoy that moment that I've worked hard for. So
that's
a bit rambling. Sorry, Chris. Are there many concise points here? Because we're failing.
No. That's perfect.
Is that your life tip?
That's my life tip. Get a cat.
Get four.
Yeah. Get as many cats as you can fit in your house.
Get a lot of cats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Avoid people and get a cat.
My other one is don't worry about things that haven't happened.
Because
I think you do this quite a lot, Dave. Dave will sort of go off on one about how he's going to deal with this thing if it happens in this particular way and what he would say and, oh, no, if that did that, then da-da-da. And I'm like, whoa, like, can we rewind back to the present? Right now.
Look, I'm planning for imaginary scenarios that may just well happen.
Okay, going back to the present, right here, right now. None of that has happened. So don't start making plans for this disaster that may or may not occur.
Mimi.
How is that?
Yours was just one long rambling thing.
Oh, mine was just one long ramble. I don't know.
I've got four.
No, get a cat. That was one.
Happy wife, quiet life. So, yes, Juliet, you're right.
There you go.
Yeah, that's my tip.
I'd class that as five.
I think it's five.
I'm also dyslexic, so I'm not very good at this side of it, you know, like. well, dyslexic, dyspraxic. Yeah, I can't really add up. So it sounded roughly five, I reckon.
Julia just spoke for long enough to confuse you.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, yeah, but we'll class that as, that sounded like about five. I reckon I can make it into five.
Yeah, he'll be like, get a cat.
It'll be like, get four cats. And then it'll be, get house of cats.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, maybe get cats. Yeah, I you know what? I genuinely miss having a cat. I really do.
It's good and bad.
They're little fuckers, but they're good little fuckers.
Yeah. They are.
Yeah. We're currently surrounded by three, all staring at us like there's some weird voice coming out of the computer, and it's
funny. You think that are they staring? You thinking that, or are they thinking, when are you going to feed me?
Probably the latter.
Well, yeah. To be fair, I've been doing quite well, right? One of them is sitting there thinking, wall, 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 because that's pretty much all he does is just stare at the wall. One asleep, like, probably waiting to attack someone. And the poor one has probably just gone to do a poo or throw up.
On the floor.
Just on the floor.
No,
it's a tray. Oh, man. Cats.
Yeah, well, actually, you can go clean up the cat stick that they just did.
On that note of cat sick, thank you. I mean, it's been an absolute pleasure to catch up with both of you. It's been thank you so much for your time. Like, I really appreciate it. Like, send my love to Kat's daughter, all of that.
We will. Hopefully,
hopefully at some point in the near future we can actually hang out in person.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
That's it. Yeah. We're going to go out for one long bike ride, so I'll meet you in the middle somewhere and we'll have a 2 meter distance chat.
We'll have to go. I'll have to come nearer to you because there's too many people and humans flying.
You'd have to leave really late in the evening, right? So it was like 12:01. It's probably the busiest time of Shoreditch, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it actually? Is it really weird in Shoreditch? Is it all quiet, or the pubs and stuff being shut?
So it's weird. Like, pubs and stuff are all shut, but there's like a couple of like coffee shops open here and there.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're not allowed inside. They've basically got like a shutter at the front and you order at the front and then they bring you your coffee. But a lot of them are like selling like, you know, milk and flour and things like that as well in those coffee shops. But it is, do you know what? People around, noticeably quieter. Cars, same as usual, still busy.
Really?
Yeah, many cars. There's definitely more people on bikes. But I don't think the amount of cars has gone down. I think the amount of cars feels to me pretty similar.
It was noticeably different, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right. But I think that'll change tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fucking hell. Tomorrow. Yeah. Good job. I'm going to be riding for 2 hours indoors tomorrow morning. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got like a long ride outside or a Zwift race that I'm trying to like decide between.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tomorrow I'm recording a podcast with Francis in the evening.
Oh, nice. So, cool.
Yeah, that one would be fun. It's funny because like I've done the one with Steve, which is really interesting, and then I've got you guys, and then I've got Francis. It's just a nice little like group of three. Actually, should be quite interesting. We'll see how it all goes. But yeah,
when you do the Uber pretzel, is that on Saturday, Sunday?
Saturday, 107 miles. Yeah, Saturday.
Yeah, I saw the invite. I'm like,
Yeah. Oh man, I got asked to lead it, and I was like, oh man, does that mean I've got to prepare everything, like food and drink wise, for the whole thing? I was like, well, and then I was like, as long as I make it non-drop, if I need to go for a piss, it's all fine.
Yeah. It's totally fine. The elastic band thing works pretty well on that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's quite useful, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can be fine.
Be chilled. And if you've got crashes in it, they like tend to pull the pace up a bit.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be a laugh. Like, I think that I've not really organised it so much. I've just been asked to host it on Zwift. the guy that's organised. So we're doing it as a fundraiser for Pace, and loads of the guys that I used to ride with are like are doing it, and they've asked me to like be the ride leader for it. Which I don't know why. Maybe they think I know what I'm doing on Zwift. I don't know. but they've asked me to be the ride leader, and I was like, look, if anyone else wants to join, like by all means, people can join onto it. But basically, I think there's 15 of us.
Cool.
Maybe not. They're not necessarily all confirmed, but there's at least 15. I've been told there's 15 people who have agreed to do it. So we'll see how.
If you go down, and you've got like 13 already. Like, yeah.
That'd be all right, wouldn't it? It's just riding a bike.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
Yeah. I've not done that route yet. I'm quite looking forward to ticking it off on Zwift.
It's quite a good one.
There's a lot of movement in it, ups and downs and everything, isn't there?
Yeah. Quite. Quite hard. Awesome. A fun one. Yeah, it's better when you do it in a group, though. And if it's no drop, it's just nice. It's a bit more chilled.
Yeah, that's exactly my thinking. It's like you keep everyone together and have a bit of a... bit of a social as well. Like, people could download the companion app and message each other, like... it'd be fine. Francis is doing it.
Is he?
Yeah, he's agreed to do it. I texted him while he was doing the Double Everest. I was like, you fancy doing this for me, mate? And he was like, yeah, all right.
Ask me again when I've finished Everesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Bless him. He's probably still struggling from that. But yeah, he said he'd be up for it. And like the main reason was like Pacer, like at the moment, they're under a lot of pressure financially as a small charity that doesn't really get much, if any, government funding. They're under a lot of pressure. So, yeah, which I've been trying to think of a few different things to do to help like fundraise some money for them. And this was the first one that was quite an easy, accessible thing for other people to get involved in. So, yeah, we'll see. I've got a couple of other ideas in the pipeline. Hopefully... at least one of them will be a goer. I hope.
Yeah, it's hard at the moment, isn't it? You just don't. Yeah, and a lot of charities, like you said, especially the smaller ones, are struggling because there's a lot of these fundraisers for these huge, huge charities that kind of do have the pockets to cover them, and like the smaller ones are struggling.
They really are, and it's noticeable. It is noticeable from what I've seen, but they'll. They do their best, make it work as best they can. Same, like, work out ways to support them. That's all we can do, isn't it? Like, support your local charity.
Yep.
Yeah. New hashtag. Do it.
That's it. 107 miles a day for 107 days.
Mate, if lockdown carries on, it's going to happen. All on Zwift.
Yeah. Cool. I still can't believe that.
Yeah, let's not think about that one. That one hurt.
Impressive. Anyway, I'll let you go. I'll stop talking your ears off.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time, you legends.
Oh, lovely to chat to you. Yeah. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye.